Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have an episode on social exclusion, how and why it happens, and neurotypical parents. They are the most interesting people to talk about. I find them fascinating. But I really want to focus today on kids, social exclusion, and how it happens. So many of us talk about our child not being invited to the party, why we're not in the group chat, why when you walk up to the school gate, you feel like everyone else knows what they're doing, but then you're standing back, you feel like you walk over, people don't want you there, you said something weird, you're feeling super sensitive and feeling like there's social exclusion at play at school, and it's not just about the kids, it's with the parents. You feel it? Now, if that's the case, I have a playground guide on my website, which is an ADHD Mum's guide to the playground. And it is all about the social aspect of neurotypical parents, neurodivergent parents, and how we can best work as an ADHD mum in that pickup school environment. Totally recommend it. That is there for you if you want to know more about it. But today I want to talk about how neurotypical parents create social exclusion. I'm going to say it here. I'm a direct person. I am very well known for saying what not many other people will say. Now, this is not necessarily cruel from the neurotypical parent, and I'm not blaming them, to be clear, but it is hurting our kids, it's hurting us, and I want to talk about why it happens and how we can create change. Now, the research is really clear. I have all of the research in my show notes if you would like to have a look. What we do know, and the research backs us up, is that autistic and ADHD kids get invited to fewer birthday parties. They just do. They have fewer play dates. They eat alone more often. They're picked last or not at all. Now, this starts so early, I'm talking preschool, like 3 years old, this can start. Now, studies don't always capture all of it, but what we also see every day that women report to me is that often there's exclusion with the parents too. Now, the research shows us, and again in the show notes, is that students' attitudes towards peers actually shows us that it's adults' attitudes, teachers and parents, that actually influence peer acceptance of students with disability more than the actual peers. Also, we know with kids that they're often a blank canvas. When I explained ADHD to my kids, it was actually beautiful how little knowledge they had of anything because they asked the most beautiful questions. So we know that kids are a clear landscape. They don't have all of the bias yet. So where do they get the bias from? The research shows us it is coming from adults' attitudes, teachers and parents specifically. We also know that autistic and ADHD kids have fewer close friendships. So really when we dig deep into the neurotypical parents, they talk a lot about discomfort, anxiety, and that driving them to not include neurodivergent children. Now what they list is things around fear of a meltdown or a child being disruptive, feeling uncertain about communication, sensory needs, pressure to make events go smoothly, meet society expectations, wanting it to go well. The thought of having to add a complexity to that might be something that a neurotypical person may not want to do. So they avoid it by not extending the invitation. However, of course, as an ADHD mum, I'm like, oh, what? So you don't want to accommodate my child for one thing that barely impacts you, I have to do that every single day. Like, where is the compassion? I think that is a question that needs to be asked, but I'm trying to do this episode in a way that's fair to everybody because I'm not a neurotypical parent. I wish that I knew what that was like. It would seem very simple. So rather than ask a child's family about what would help, many people just don't extend the invitation to that child. Again, backed up by evidence, which will be in my show notes. So this can often be covered up by logistics. So there's common reasons why neurodivergent children are not invited. Some common ones I see in here is, oh, we're just keeping the party small. We thought it might be too much for them. We've only invited the kids who get along easily. Oh, it was up to my son or daughter, they chose, which may have been influenced by the adult, but kind of blamed on the child as their decision. Like, I can't make him invite who he doesn't want to invite. These explanations are socially acceptable. However, they are frequently language for avoiding discomfort, or a difference. And parents of neurodivergent children kind of realize early on that's a pattern. And you might take the first one as coincidence. You're trying to be nice about things. But at some point, you're like, hey, that seems to be happening a lot. And you have to look your child in the face, of course, and talk to them about the fact that they weren't invited. The other thing that I've seen happen as well is that a neurodivergent child might be asked to go for a play date to celebrate a birthday at a different time. I've seen that happen like in older, like tweens, teenagers, where let's say you've got a group of 12-year-olds, they invite four kids for a sleepover. Your kid is the fifth person in that. They don't get invited because it's a limit of four. Why? I don't know. But then your child like can go to the movies with them another time. But that isn't the same as the sleepover. So throwing that up as the same isn't the same. There seems to be some common threads to the exclusion. So children that feel repeatedly exclusion will often talk about increased anxiety and hypervigilance, rejection sensitivity. They may start masking, people pleasing. They may feel worthless. They may feel like they can't contribute because they're not talking about that particular party that everyone else has gone to. They may feel blame. They may feel isolated. They may then feel different than even they did before. They might avoid social situations, think there's no point. I can't even be bothered because I never really get accepted. They may feel rage, grief, shame. I mean, to be honest, probably a lot of women on this podcast listening would have felt the feelings. We know that from the studies, which will be in the show notes, that there are impacts on mental health from exclusion. Really, no big surprise. So this isn't just parenting. This is a culture issue in that we still live in a society that sees inclusion as optional, which grates me beyond belief, something nice to do as an extra, not actually a community responsibility. And that's where I feel like neurotypical families don't realize that their everyday decisions, like who to invite, who they speak up for, actually shapes inclusion. That actually is inclusion daily. It's probably more important than what schools do. But yet, showing the awareness of neurodivergence on social media as awareness doesn't actually teach the neurotypical people what they could do. And that's where I think we need to move forward. Until the neurotypical adults can actually take ownership of inclusion as their responsibility, neurodivergent children just experience distress. And I really want to say here, it's got a common flavor as the DV miniseries that I did late last year. You can go back into my podcast episodes to have a look. It was done at the end of last year, which is 2024 season two. And what I spoke about in that was that men have a responsibility within the change, within the DV space, with all of the women that are being killed within that space. If you are a man and you don't participate in those violent behaviors, let's say, that doesn't mean that you don't do anything. And that's not responsibility. Your responsibility as a male, I believe, is to positively impact, whether it's parenting your child differently, helping out your sister that's experiencing somebody, not participating in that culture that can create it. There are little things that are going on. You can't go, oh, I don't know those people. I don't hit women. I don't know anything about it. And just move it away from you is not your problem. I believe that's the same for neurotypical parents. If you do not have neurodivergent children, that doesn't mean it's not up to you. It is our responsibility as a community. Actually, neurotypical people are incredibly influential in this, which is what we can see from the research. So what needs to change, I think, is neurotypical parents need to learn about differences, regulation, sensory, and how to set things up that cater to inclusion. That may not be that much. We are not talking about putting in ramps to your home that are incredibly expensive. We're not talking about that. We might be talking about really small accommodations that could actually work for everybody. When we talk about classrooms, we're not talking about doing an individual 30-page checklist for every single child with a diagnosis. We are talking about having options for everybody. For example, maybe when you teach, you do visual, you do different types of learning styles. You may cater for visual learners, for auditory learners. You may cater for all of the different ways of learning in a classroom. You may have options. I love a sensory tent in a classroom. You don't have to hand in your diagnosis paperwork before you go in. There may be children who have had trauma, undiagnosed. They may be going through a hard time. Maybe their pets passed away. they need to have those options too. Maybe they're not feeling good that day. So when we talk about making accommodations, when we're talking about doing things that actually would help everybody, not just being like, this is the party. If you can handle it, come. If not, too bad. Or a child having to mask to be there because they're so desperate. I also think there needs to be a real reflection element to this where families need to question the discomfort. What is it that makes them feel uncomfortable and why are they not okay with feeling that? Yes, it's new information, but you also need to remember that you're dealing with neurodivergent parents who are usually desperate for their kids to be invited. So what is the neurodivergent parent going to do? Oh my God, they're probably going to give you some great information, some great tips, or maybe they'll say, I'm going to come and stay. Don't worry about it. I'm there. I had a child come to a birthday party recently who had an anaphylactic allergy to egg. Now, I didn't know that when I invited him. And when their father arrived, he said to me, oh, do you know how to use an EpiPen? I've got an egg allergy. And we were actually in like a play center and there was heaps of food around that was brought in. I didn't know what was what. And there was like multiple parties going on. And I said to him, one, I've never used an EpiPen. Two, I don't know anything about egg allergies. Does he know what he can eat or does he not know what to eat? Like, where are we at with this? And then the father said, you know what? I'm just going to stay because I really want him to come. And I actually think in this environment, he may not know what he can and can't eat. And I was like, great. So if he had have told me in advance, I would have rung up the place, talked about what food was there, allergies, and had a bit of a protocol as to what to do. So a lot of the time, it doesn't mean that you can't include that person. I wouldn't have said to the boy with the egg allergy, well, you can't come because I don't know if there's egg there. That's not what I would do. I would then go and figure out what are the policy, how can we mitigate the risk, talk to the dad, figure it out and speak to the dad about it. He may say to me, actually, I prefer to stay if you've never used an EpiPen. Or I might say, hey, I'm queasy with needles. I can't do that. Would you be able to stay? But having that conversation is completely fine. Now, the conversation really needs to be talked about at home because children copy how adults are and how they treat difference and how they treat people. That is copied. So you can't talk about being such a kind person at school and being a good friend and then as soon as your friend leaves to start whinging about them. What you actually do is more important than what you say. So that conversation that you've had to make sure that child is included can also happen with the child whose birthday party it is, depending on how old the child is and how appropriate it is. But you might say, oh, that child's brain works a bit differently. I'm not sure if they'll be okay with the music. I'm not sure if they'll be okay with this. I'm just going to check in with their mum. Or you might say the same with the EpiPen. That child's got an egg allergy. I really need to figure out the birthday cake to accommodate for this request. Why is it not the same thing? Anyway, so the action would be to invite the child, to adapt, to check in, to follow up, to try again. Let's talk about some lived experiences for a moment. So I've got a couple of things that listeners have written in. If you would like to write in, you can always jump on my Jot form in the show notes called the listener form. So I've got a couple of quotes here. First one is, the whole class was invited except my 7-year-old son. When I followed up, the parents said that they had forgotten, but then he was the only one left out. So that seemed like it wasn't true. The next one is from Amanda, and she said, the parents just stopped speaking to me when they found out my child was autistic. Suddenly there was no more playdates. We had been at their house for playdates before. They knew him. Once they found out that he was actually autistic, suddenly we were never invited again, even though he was the same child they had had over before. The next one said, I followed up when my child was excluded from a birthday party. And they said that they didn't think that my child would cope with the party, but no one even asked us what she would need and whether I was willing to stay, which I was. All right, I'm not going to continue to go on and on with the quotes because I'm sure you've got your own examples. The other things that you might hear in life, which are actually exclusion, is they are just too much. She's very emotional. I just don't know what to expect from them. Meanwhile, your child might be asking why they weren't included. So, how do we know who neurotypical parents are in this dynamic? Because it can be really tricky. Now, obviously, I'm an autism and ADHD assessor, so I'm pretty good at spotting it now. I'm going to take you through what it will look like at a really basic level. If you would love to know more about neurotypical parents and kids, why we struggle to communicate with them, why they tend to exclude us, how it happens, please download my school pickup guide for ADHD mums. It's on the website. I'll put it in the show notes. Reason being is because I have written, I don't know, well over 100 pages. It's like a whole novel around who the different types of parents are at pickup, how to talk to them, who to try to use your social battery on, who to bypass, what's important, and how to not come off like a bitch. So please go ahead and download that guide if you would like more information. I'm going to go over some basics. So how do you spot a neurotypical parent who would be more likely to exclude your child? One, they keep their social circle tight and they make it hard to join. Two, they don't ask about your child's support needs. They just exclude. Three, they smile at drop-off, but they never follow through with a conversation, particularly if they know your child has got a diagnosis or has behaviors that I suppose you think they would know about. Four, they freeze if they see something that's out of the norm and then they don't speak to you again. They also say, oh, it's totally fine. My child is like that too. Ha ha ha, no worries at all. But you can see the silent judgment because she actively avoids you after that. Their child might be really nice, curious, open. I'm not saying that these are people that are malicious or mean, but they may pull social strings and close the door quietly on interactions with their children because they are uneasy, let's say. So these types of parents, often I would describe them as cold or boring, okay? Now, that's my personal opinion on how they come across to me. I've had to describe neurotypical people to my husband as boring and name people that are boring. So sometimes we can think to ourselves, was that me? Was I cold? Was I being too much? Did I offend them? Because they seemed cold. Sometimes you haven't done anything, but it feels cold because they're neurotypical. Now, neurotypical people are a fascinating bunch. I don't understand them. They have a social world that's really, I find, quite weird. They run on very much unspoken rules. There are so many subtle cues that don't make any sense. So it's like this emotional pacing where it's like they don't just sprint to the finish line where they get to actually share something important. They like run a cross-country race across all different landscapes very slowly until they eventually get to the part where they get to do some kind of self-disclosure. Whereas neurodivergent people are a bit more like, let's just sprint down the 100-meter track and then we can get to the part where we get to overshare and have a good laugh. Neurotypical people tend to take a long time to get to that point. That can feel really alien if you're neurodivergent. So it doesn't mean that neurotypical people aren't kind or they're mean or they're cold or they're boring. They're not, but they come across that way at times because the way that they operate socially is really different. If you want a really quick list of how to spot a neurotypical parent, one, they default to small talk. They talk weekend, weather, sports. Two, they avoid direct feedback or anything emotional. Three, they smile and wave, but they don't really follow through. Four, they don't really express discomfort up front. They may do it through a distance or something very external. They're the people that will say we should catch up, but they don't really mean it. Whereas a neurodivergent person takes that literally and then books a catch up and then is confused while the neurotypical person doesn't seem keen. Also, neurotypical people generally have these invisible social lines. They get them, the other typical people do, but we are like, I do not understand what's happening here. So that's how to spot a neurotypical parent. They are often attached to neurotypical children. So when we are a neurodivergent and we're talking to a neurotypical, we need to be aware that if we want to call out something like, my son was really disappointed, he wasn't invited to the party. I know that most of the group of friends were. I wouldn't open with that because neurotypical people expect to have like basically some kind of warm up socially first. So if you believe you're dealing with a neurotypical person and you've gone through that checklist, you're like, I think they're neurotypical. And again, I'm not talking about people that are mean. There's mean people that are neurotypical and neurodivergent. If you've got a mean parent, that's a totally different thing. I'm talking about educating neurotypical people because they seem to get overwhelmed, confused, don't want to ask, don't want to make anybody uncomfortable because they value not having conflict, everything going well. And they value all of that kind of like easy social cohesion over other things. So those neurotypical parents actually need to skill up, which is what this podcast is about. So if you're a neurodivergent parent, you think you've got a neurotypical person that has not invited your child and you feel like you'd like to address it in a calm and nice way. One, you need to start with all of these like really boring small talks. Again, the playground guide has all the scripts in there. How is the weather? How is your day? Having all of those things written down, having a couple to fall back on is a very neurotypical way of starting a conversation. So if you walk up to them, and even if you say it really nicely, hey, I just wanted to check in. I noticed my son hasn't been included. That is going to really spin them because they don't enjoy having conflict, especially with no softener. So you want to soften first. Then you could say something like, hey, I just want to check in. I noticed Sam hasn't been included on a few things lately. No pressure, but I just would love to understand if something's going on. You could say that. You could say, hey, I know my son Sam needs a bit of extra support sometimes, but there's still a child who really wants to connect. And I'd really love to have an honest conversation about how he can be more included because he's starting to feel really upset that he's being left out and I'm actually really happy to help out. Or if you are done and you want to set a boundary, you could say something like, this has been really hard. I can't keep trying to fit my child into spaces when they're quietly excluded. I hope that changes one day, but for now, I'm just going to be stepping back. So if, for example, you may have been doing like a playdate hosting thing, but you keep getting left out, you may just set that boundary up front. And that is a decision that you have to make based on your personal scenario. So that's a personal circumstance and a choice. I'm just trying to give some ideas around how we can talk to the neurotypical parents. Now, if you're listening and you're neurotypical and you're starting to see this pattern where you may be somebody that's just not inviting that child because it's a bit hard, or why that in other people, and you'd actually really like to make change, then I'm going to give you some things to do. Number one, please don't make assumptions about what a child can handle. Ask that parent directly. It is so much nicer to ask the parent than to make assumptions and not include. Two, talk to your kids about difference and fairness. If your child is saying things like, why does that kid get to hold a sensory toy and I don't? You might say, they're not getting extra things. They're actually getting what they need. Their brain is different and they need different things. You might look at there might be a diabetes child that has an alarm system in the classroom. There might be people with more visible disabilities. Talk about those. It's the same. Everybody is different. They're working on different things. You might say, it's okay to be friends with someone who's different. I think that kid is lovely. I think he's got a lot of energy. And you know what? He's always got something funny to say. You might like to pick out things about that child that you think is great. Because what it's about is teaching your child to be better, teaching your child to include others because they might be missing out by not having a neurodivergent friend. So we want to encourage our children to invite everybody. We also do not know what's going to happen in the future. If your child got into an accident, something happened to them, and they had a lot of trauma and that affected them, how would you feel? Would you like people to be patient and make accommodations? Yes, you would. And you would expect that. If you are a neurotypical parent and you don't have a lot of knowledge on neurodivergent kids, I can see why it's a tricky subject that you'd want to avoid. I can see it. However, you have a responsibility to your community to create this inclusive environment. We are missing out on a lot by not including everybody. There are so many famous people who are coming out now as neurodivergent. What are we missing out on if those people had been excluded? The most brilliant brains. So we are not waiting for someone else to create change around inclusion. You can make change around inclusion now. If you're a neurodivergent mother, you can start to quietly and kindly let the other parents know things that they can do to help include your child. This is not about us and them. This is about inclusion. And we may, as neurodivergent parents, have to bring in the neurotypicals because I'm concerned with the way that their brain works and the way that they value social cohesion over those hard conversations. It's up to us, the neurodivergent parents, to make that happen. So we need to practically show neurotypical parents what they can do to include everybody. We need to empower other neurodivergent parents to speak up. We need to back each other, encourage each other. And this is not in a way to create conflict. This is not an us and them. This is about true inclusion, which I believe is up to the neurodivergent parents to do. And the research shows us it's the neurotypical parents that are really creating some of these social exclusions. But we've also found that research is not about malicious, mean, cruel. They could be very well-meaning, but just don't understand. So let's help educate people kindly around inclusion to change the world for our kids. So this isn't just about birthday parties. It's about belonging. It's about our schools, and it's about our kids not being left out, because that becomes a story to them about their worth. And then that story that they carry can become too much, because it's not true. They are not too much. They could be excluded and they could be included easily. And your child is not the problem. So inclusion is not a school policy. It's a social practice. It dies and lives in parents and what they do when no one's watching and what they say when no one's watching. You may find that they do not know what to say. Neurotypical parents may not know what to say to their children about the neurodivergent child who is behaving differently, let's say, or is getting some kind of accommodation at school. They may not know what to say, so they don't say anything. Now, that's not okay, but let's ask the neurodivergent parents, give them the script, show them, because that is true inclusion. And I think the neurodivergent mums are the ones that need to be the leaders in this front. However, we don't want to just walk around only looking for neurodivergent parents, because that's not the spirit of inclusion, is it? If we leave this up to neurotypical parents to include us and lead the way on inclusion, I am concerned how long we'll wait to see any real inclusion. So let's not avoid the neurotypicals, but we may need to look at how we communicate with them. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please jump into the listener notes, go onto the Jot form, go into the Facebook group, share your experience. I very much believe in inclusion. I think it can happen. But what we need to do is stop talking about awareness and the system that doesn't work for us and start talking about what we can do to change it. And we don't have to be politicians to do that. The politicians are not doing a lot in this space, I don't believe. But the neurodivergent parents are. And we can make change. You can make change. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy this.